Inside Lacrosse Podcast.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the IL Preps Podcast. I am Dan Avery, contributing writer at Inside Lacrosse, joined today by my esteemed colleague,
Jeff Shannon, managing editor of Inside Lacrosse.
And Jeff, it was a real doozy in the week of high school lacrosse. We got a new number one. Let's delve into that right now. What is the shakeup in the top 25?
Yeah, so this is that time of year when you start seeing the corrections being made in the in the way that things fall out. Part of it is that teams have played, you know, their games start matching up, so you don't have those one team that's played eight games, another team that's played, you know, two games, and you're trying to rank everybody. The matchups start making sense. Teams have played each other on a national and regional level, which helps with head-to-head. So we had some shakeups this week. The biggest one, and we'll get into it with our interview today, but Culver Academy beat the Hill Academy 4-2 this past Sunday, which was Culver taking out our number one team. Hill had been the number one program in our Under Armour Inside Lacrosse rankings through the early part of the season. Now, with that result, we have a new number one, Darien Connecticut, who is 8-0, really just kind of rolling through its schedule in both Connecticut and in the tri-state region. They've had some nice wins, including against Manhasset early. Thanks to the results of this weekend, they currently hold the longest winning streak in the nation, which is, I forget if they played a game earlier this week, but it was at 40 the last time I had looked at it. So they are our new number one, followed by Landon, who's 15-0, number two. And then Culver moves into the three spot with the 12-1 record. They have one lone loss against Haverford earlier in the season. Hill falls to four. IMG shuffles up to five. They sort of, I feel like we were maybe under-ranking them a little bit. Their strength of schedule isn't as strong as it's been in recent years, but I still think what they've done, and their one loss being a one-goal loss to Hill Academy, kind of speaks to the strength of this program.
Yeah.
A big jump that we see was Cold Spring Harbor moving to 10-0. Again, this is one of those corrections. You like what the New York teams are doing, but now their record's starting to match some of the other programs. And Cold Spring right now has probably the best record triangulated in Long Island. Then you got Bullis, A.L.N. Old Farms, LaSalle College. And then in the top 10, the biggest mover this week, I would say, another big mover next to Cold Spring Harbor would be St. Ignatius Prep California. Had a tremendous East Coast road trip. Played Landing competitively and then beat Garden City and then Chaminade, who had been ranked in the previous week. So a lot of movement, a lot of fun programs to see in the top 10 this week. And really that first big shakeup comes in week 7 of our rankings.
Yeah, definitely cool to see St. Ignatius pop into the top 10. Is that the highest ranking for a California team ever?
St. Ignatius has been up there before. Yeah. I would have to go back to the archives a little bit, but they've definitely been top 10, top 15 in the past, thanks to wins, including if I remember correctly, they have a win over Chaminade in the past. They beat them last year. I think they played them close a couple of years ago. That kind of set the world on notice. That's not surprising. If any program nationally is going to be a top 10 program consistently, that's not quite the sports academy teams, the Culvers and the Hills and the IMG. St. Ignatius is definitely going to be that program. They've done a tremendous job building that program and creating consistency with it. Their ability to produce a talented, well-coached team year in and year out is tremendous on their part and well-deserved of a top 10 ranking.
Yes. Let's go straight into recapping some of these games, and we're going to start with the biggest one, like you mentioned, Culver Academy 4, Hill Academy 2, end of a 33-game win streak for the Hill Academy, and also probably the end of their tenure as our number one team. I believe they were the number one team for us all of last year and for half of the season this year, so that's quite a...
Yeah, you give them, what, 17 rankings last year? And then seven with the preseason rankings this year. That's a tremendous run.
Yeah.
And something that can't be overlooked in terms of how good they were and how good they are as a program and what they're able to do there. I'd seen them earlier in this year. I'd seen Culver earlier this year. Culver looked like their depth was a little better than Hills was. Hills has tremendous front line guys. Riley Curtis, Justin Nacio, just in talent that we've known and seen covered extensively. But Culver, especially when watching them play McDonough this year, just they had weapons, you know, five, six, seven men deep, which sort of belies the score of this game, which was 4-2, Culver over Hill Academy.
Yeah, shout out to anybody who took the under with the amount of Canadians that were on the field in this one.
but looks like, I mean, heroes were Matt Schmidt, their goalie, 2017 recruit going to Notre Dame. He had 12 saves for Culver in a tight game. And Will Clayton, 2018, who's committed to Loyola, who had led the scoring for Culver with two goals. He also got one from Wheaton. Jackaboyce, I believe that's his last name, another Notre Dame commit, 2017, with a goal. And then Jackson Reed, who's kind of been their offensive star this year, he had a goal. He's headed to Ohio State. So big win there, as you mentioned, 33-game win streak goes down for Hill. That was the second best in the country.
Yeah, and to tell us more about this game, we got in contact with John Posner, the head coach of Culver Academy. He's going to tell us a little bit more about that game and his team.
So first question I had, congrats on the win this past Sunday. How did that game go about? And it was kind of hard to find a report on it, but from your perspective, how did that victory against Hill Academy come together for you guys?
Sure, it was not your typical Culver Hill game by any means, you know, with a low scoring game of 4-2. You know, I think both teams played extremely well defensively. Both goaltenders played great. It was a little Hill ran a 10-man ride on us that caused us some problems. And they pressured us a lot on defense and caused a lot of turnovers on our part. We got up on them early. I think we took a 3-0 lead or 2-0 lead, and then they struck back and they got it to 3-2 in the third, and we were able to put one more in. But again, it was kind of a back and forth game. Goalies, both goaltending, you know, they were both great. Hill certainly had a lot of chances at the end to put one in, and they weren't able to do so. So not your typical game. I think we're both pretty high-powered offensive teams. So I think Brody Merrill and I were both surprised.
John, could you, for listeners that don't know about the program or the history of the program, can you go over a little bit of Culver and its development of its lacrosse program in the recent years?
Sure. So our program here started as a club team in 1982, and it was recognized in the late 90s as a varsity program. Indiana high school lacrosse was just kind of taking off in the late 90s. I came here in 2004 from Massachusetts. We had maybe, you know, 30 some teams in the state playing. When I took our program over, we were kind of in the middle of the pack, maybe a top 5 team in the state of Indiana. As my time here increased, we started to attract, you know, a lot of our team back then was made up of, lacrosse was a second sport for a lot of kids. So hockey players had also played lacrosse. And started to recruit a bit here, we started to change that and get some kids that played lacrosse that also played hockey. So I'd say our turnaround came like 2009 and 10 when we started to take our team out east and started to compete against programs, you know, in Baltimore, D.C., Virginia, and expose the guys to what I thought, you know, was where we wanted to be playing that type of lacrosse. And then over the times, we started to attract more and more kids. playing the game, and we started to increase our schedule slowly. I think 2011 or 12, we added Boys Latin onto the schedule. We had Severin on, and it kind of evolved from there. So I would say it happened relatively quickly in the grand schemes of how high school lacrosse has been.
John, for this year's rendition of the team, you guys are 12-1 so far. Who are some of the kids that NCAA fans or high school fans should know who are contributing to this year's success?
Yeah, we got quite a few. I think our biggest impact player has been Jackson Reed, who's going to attend Ohio State University. Jackson's just a dynamic player that's able to take the pace of the game and slow it down to hit the way he wants to play. He has an incredible shot. He has a phenomenal vision, and he's a competitor. Our goalie, Matt Schmidt, who's going to be attending Notre Dame, he's been huge in the net for us. He's competitive. He's hardworking. He's the first one to practice, the last one to leave. He's always studying film and studying the opponent. He's become just a great ball stopper. Liam Duff, who's a defenseman for us right now, he'll be attending Delaware. He's big, strong, physical. He does a lot for us. He can cover anybody. He has a phenomenal stick. He's able to get the ball off the ground and help push transition. So I think Liam's going to be – he'll be a great college defenseman. He's rangy. He's fast. He's tough. We have two defensive middies that I think on any other team, they probably could be playing. They'd be on a first-line midfield. Ryan Hallenbeck attending Notre Dame and Luke Anderson attending Dartmouth. Both of those two are over 6 foot. They're very strong. They're physical. They talk really well. They have great sticks. They can push early offense. Again, I think those two could play offense on any other team. We've given that role of playing on the D side for us, and they've embraced it, and they really helped us shut down a lot of imposing middies. And then we got a plethora of younger kids. We have Alex Simmons, who's going to attend Denver, just a dynamic midfielder. William Clayton, another dynamic midfielder who's a junior, he can dodge, he can shoot, he plays hard. Another great midfielder we have that just recently got hurt has been Jake Stevens, who's going to Cornell. We think really highly of Jake, and we're hoping to get him back here shortly. And last one I'd say is Austin Madronic, one of our attackmen that's going to attend Cornell. He's a phenomenal off-ball player, knows how to find space really well, and is great off the ground.
John, what does the rest of the season look like for you guys? Well, do you have planned now?
Sure. This weekend is our parents' weekend, so we're hosting two teams from Detroit. The following weekend is we play in the Midwest Lacrosse Challenge, which is a new league that was started out in the Midwest that comprises of teams of Brother Rice, Loyola, New Trier, Detroit Country Day School, MICDS, Desmet Jesuit, and Carmel from Indiana. So that'll be a tournament, three games hopefully for us. We have to win two games to get to the championship game on Sunday. So we're hoping to get there, and then we'll end our year in the Interact Challenge out east as a guest school, as we did last year, and that'll come third weekend of May. So very challenging schedule ahead of us.
Final question for you is, you know, you got two of your most esteemed alumni playing this weekend in Maryland Hopkins and Joel Tinney and Matt Neufeld. Do you have any predictions for that game, how it's going to go?
Boy, that's a tough one. I don't know what the right answer is because I might offend one of the two kids, but I do think that'll be the matchup. I think they'll pull Tinney, and I think, you know, Matt will be on him. I think, you know, it'll be a great matchup because I think they know each other's tendencies. You know, Matt knows what Joel likes to do, and you know, Joel certainly knows Matt's some of Matt's faults, and I'm sure he'll bait him into it. But if I was a betting man, I would say Hopkins will come out on top.
Awesome, John. Thank you very much for your time today, and good luck with the rest of the season.
Thank you very much, guys. I appreciate your coverage.
Before we delve into the rest of the recap, we got to give a shout-out to our sponsor, Sideline Swap. Sideline Swap is where lacrosse players buy and sell their gear, find deals up to 70% off on heads, shafts, helmets, and more, or snag unique gear from colleges and the pros. Sideline Swap also lets you sell old gear simply and securely. List in seconds, and they'll send you a prepaid shipping label when it sells. Visit sidelineswap.com today to get started. That's sideline, SWAP.com.
Before we get into some of the other games, I did want to bring up, I mentioned the 13-game win streak for Hill. The longest win streak in the nation also fell this past week. Victor out of New York lost to Brother Rice last weekend in a 10-9 win for the Michigan program. And that ends a 50-game win streak. Was looking for box scores for this, couldn't find a tremendous amount of information, but I did see that Victor had been up big at halftime, 7-3, before Brother Rice came storming back. Goalie for Victor, Chase Ehrlin, who I believe is the brother, I'm going to assume is the brother of TD, the face-off midfielder at Albany. He had 17 saves in this game, but Brother Rice was just able to make a good offensive run in that second half and snaps the longest win streak, which was at 50 games. So another big victory. That also affected Victor, had been ranked in the top 25 previously. They drop out. You know, if we extended these things to 30, they would be in there someplace. But they just, right now, just a little bit on the outside looking in.
Yeah, an incredible streak comes of nine undefeated seasons back-to-back in 2015 and 2016. Very interesting result. Another game that you mentioned earlier was St. Ignatius 11, Chaminade 10 in this game. Harvard recruit Bryn Evans was the hero in this one. 6 goals. Wow.
Yeah, Bryn had a really good road trip. I want to say he had 6 goals here. I think he had a hat trick against Landon and then one or maybe a couple more in the Garden City game. He was someone that I was probably sleeping on a little bit, and then he's just been tremendous on this road trip, and I'm looking forward to seeing him a little bit more. He's committed to Harvard as a 2017, so he should be there this fall. A couple other guys, Nick Clark, a 2017, committed to Bucknell. 3 goals and 1 assist against Chaminade, and their goalie Tunery with 13 saves in that game. Chaminade was competitive. Junior Aiden Burns had 5 goals. Patrick Cavanaugh had 3 assists, and their goalie Andrew Bonafede, 2018, committed to Duke. He had 13 saves. St. Ignatius is a good program, and they just are, yeah. And they have tremendous talent, good athleticism. But I think
it's very good senior class on this team.
Yeah,
as well.
Exactly. Very good senior class in this group, and they can match you lacrosse IQ to lacrosse IQ. Sometimes you see that in the differences in those programs. But again, St. Ignatius has been around for a decade. On this competitive level, and that's not even going back to their formation of their program, they are among the powers, and I have no problem saying that.
Patrick Cavanaugh, though, out of Shama, any relation to Matt? Do we know that?
I'm always bad with family relations. I'm going to assume there's a family relation.
Yeah. Same high school, same name, same spelling.
As a writer once said during the NCAA tournament, I think there's a lot of families in this sport. It's like, yes. Yeah, so... we'll say yes, but yeah, you know, Chaminade, they've had an okay year. I thought what's been really kind of what they've been clung to has been a really dominant performance over St. Anthony's earlier in the season. St. Anthony's has had some nice wins against national programs, so it's an interesting year for them. I'm intrigued to see where they end up. you know, towards the end of the season. They got one more matchup against St. Anthony's this year, but from what I know, they won't be playing the rubber match this year, the way that they changed the championship structure in the Catholic League means that there won't be a third game. But anyways, yeah, really good performance by St. Ignatius Prep there.
And it was the start of the MIAA season last week, and we saw two huge results that caused a whole bunch of shakeup in not only our rankings, but in our own perceptions of how that league's going to play out. We'll start with Calvert Hall 11, McDonough 9. You mentioned family relations earlier in the show. Daniel Kelly, another Kelly going to North Carolina. 5 goals, 1 assist for him. JT Pugliosi, a senior going to Ohio State, 3 goals, 1 assist. And then Liam Dara, a 2018 going to Johns Hopkins, 12 saves for him in this game.
Yeah, big upset in the MIAA on a Friday evening. McDonough had been a top 5 team and looked like one of the big powers in the nation now with this loss. Calvert Hall, who I feel like I would be fair to say that they appeared to have been underachieving for the amount of NCAA talent they've had on their roster the last year or two. I guess, you know, 2 years ago, you're like, well, they're young. Last year, it's like, oh, maybe got to get the pieces together. This year, early loss to Malvern Prep, not looking competitive nationally. You're like, okay, what are the pieces here? And I think this is the first win where you're like, okay, this is a program that could make a run to the Final Four in the MIAAs.
Yeah, and I remember yesterday in our meeting when we were ranking high school teams, I think we wrote Calvert Hall off a little bit for a loss to Conestoga, and then you turn around and look at Conestoga's record, 10-1, you say, wow, that's actually not as bad a loss as I think we had made it out to be a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah, I mean, in Conestoga, we talk about our top 25, they made a move up to 15 this week, so again, those losses aren't looking as bad. In the long view, and Calvert Hall, I think the talent is there to win. We mentioned Kelly, great shooter for them, and a long line of talent with that last name, Kelly, coming out of Calvert Hall. Pugliosi, I want to say, had the game-winning goal in this one, or the goal that solidified the win, if I remember the report correctly. And just a good program. And again, it throws the narrative of the MIA off a little bit. I was expecting maybe a McDonough rolling undefeated into championship semifinals, and now it's a little bit more up for grabs in my brain.
Yeah. The hero for McDonough in this game was Jack Simmons, a 2018 going to Georgetown. 4 goals, 1 assist for him. Big game for McDonough on Friday, visiting Boys Latin. That's a rematch of the MIAA championship game from last year. Another big result in the MIAA conference was St. Mary's 11, St. Paul's 10 in overtime. St. Paul's a team that looked to be surging a little bit, and St. Mary's with the knockoff. Ian Kranf, 4 goals, 1 assist, and then Jack Burnett, I believe a Hopkins commit, with the game-winning goal in overtime for St. Mary's. Huge shakeup again.
Yeah, St. Mary's is going to be a thorn in the side of some teams this year. I know they were playing, after this win, they were playing Boys Latin pretty competitive in the Tuesday matchup. I want to say it was close through 3 quarters before Boys Latin pulled away in the fourth. Again, you mentioned the Hopkins commit. There is talent on that team. And, again, you know, any given Tuesday or any given Friday in the MIAA, when a team is focused and the matchups work your way, you can get upset. St. Paul's has been hit and miss this year, I guess, would be a good way to promote it. Sometimes they look tremendous like they did in their Haverford win. Sometimes they get the Culver loss, which, you know, happens. And again, it's just hard to win out in the regular season, the MIAA. Again, we'll see how these competitive matchups affect the standings and affect how the playoffs set themselves up.
Yeah, it's been a very interesting year talent-wise for Annapolis area schools. You know, you got St. Mary's, who's kind of looked to be a thorn in the side, like you said. And then I don't think Severn is as bad as their record might indicate. And then Severna Park, a public school in Maryland out of the Annapolis area, is currently 10-0 last time I checked.
Yeah, it's a good year for that region's talent.
Two games that we'll mention is Taft 10, Deerfield 9. Deerfield, a team with a lot of talent, once again knocked off.
Yeah. The other game, we're looking at St. Anthony's 12, Niskayuna 7. Two teams that were ranked in our top 25 that, again, fall out to that top 30, top 35 area if we were to go that far. Just inconsistencies. Deerfield plays tough and has a tremendous amount of talent. They might be getting teamed out of losses right now, the best way to put it. While Niskayuna is competitive, you know, it's just crushing their region, but yeah, hasn't been tremendously competitive against high profile opponents outside of their region. So that affects their rankings a little bit. A couple teams I did want to mention going back to our top 25 that moved in this week. Smithtown East has had a nice run after some early losses. They moved into 17. Episcopal Academy had a big win over Malvern on Tuesday. Episcopal Academy out of Pennsylvania, that's where former Princeton head coach Chris Bates ended up at. And you could kind of see his coaching acumen coming into play already in that program with a one-goal win against a team that had been ranked in our top 25 and has tremendous talent. And then Lambert out of Georgia, 15-1, ended up in our number 25 spot. Their only loss is to Calvert Hall, who's ranked in our top 25. So kind of a fun top 25. And again, when we go over these results, you can see how the thought process starts playing into where do you put these teams.
Absolutely. So most of the games we mentioned are, you know, the gauntlet of a lot of team season in the East, but there is a lot of championships coming around the corner down in the South, and that's what our What to Watch segment is going to be centered around. Tell us about all the playoff matchups going on down there, Jeff.
Yeah, so we are in the early – Southeast usually shuts down first. Mm-hmm. That's usually because they can get out on the field in February, so you start seeing championships come around in late April and early May. This weekend, you have the Florida Championships set for Friday and Saturday night. In Florida, St. Thomas Aquinas and the Benjamin School face off in one of the matchups, and then Lake Highland Prep takes on Lake Mary in the other. St. Thomas is going for a repeat championship. They rolled to it last year, and I would have to say they're the early favorites, although they do have the toughest matchup. In this semifinals going against the Benjamin School.
Who, team that's really surged this year.
Correct, especially surged late. So that's not the most favorite matchup I would want if I were them. But again, Lake Highland Prep has historically been good. Lake Mary is probably the surprise team in this Final Four. They have a tough follow-through. They play these games Friday, and then they got to turn around Saturday, just a day later. It's in the evening, but
no prep.
No real prep. You just kind of have to go into it to win a title. But again, probably one of the more important state championships for our purposes to look at. A couple other ones to look at, South Carolina. Historically one of the earliest championships. I feel like this has moved back a little bit from when they've usually done it. Speaks a little bit from what I was reading to the growth of the sport in that state. They've added two titles. One for, like, within public schools or public-private associations that could get down there. You have different rankings, A, AA, AAA, 5A, and they split their titles up this year. So there's two championship runs in South Carolina, but they'll be crowned this weekend as well. And then my old stomping grounds, Louisiana, they will set up for their championships this week. This weekend they have their semifinals, Loyola versus Jesuit. I believe they're both New Orleans teams. I know Jesuit is. Jesuit's a real big power in other sports down there. They play Saturday. St. Paul's versus St. Thomas More is the other one. Those the winners of those games will play on Sunday. So, and again, this is that time of year. It's kind of fun. We start getting to championship runs. We'll take a look at these results in our next podcast, and then we'll start, you know, playing in the head. All of a sudden, it's championships start getting crowned in our region in the Mid-Atlantic in mid-May, and then we're going up the Northeast and California and all across the country with those. So I always like to check in and see what's going on in those areas and who's coming out on top. Yes. One other matchup I want to mention. It's interesting. When we're doing our top 25 analysis this week, one team we were looking at was Lincoln Sudbury out of Massachusetts. They had a big win over Ward Melville, the New York Power. This weekend they take on New Jersey Power Summit. If they get that win, I'm intrigued to see where we start putting them in terms of national rankings and those type of things. So that's a game I'm looking for this weekend, Lincoln Sudbury versus Summit.
And like another game we mentioned was McDonough versus Boys Latin on Friday. Keep an eye out for that one. Well, everybody, that's our show. We thank you again for listening into the IL Preps podcast. To find all the latest high school news and notes, follow at IL Preps on Twitter. I'm Dan Abrams signing off.
And I'm Jeff Shevin.
Inside the Cross Podcast.